grad student at the University of Waterloo, King Campus, my supervisor. And today I'm going to talk about a particular type of covariant ultraviolet cutoff we've been implementing on curved space-time using something called sampling theory, which I will introduce over the course of this talk. Okay, so this slide, this is my outline slide. The talk itself is 18 slides long. It's split into four main sections. First, I'm going to give some motivation. A few slides, I'm going to give a brief motivation for why we expect there to be a ultraviolet cutoff on the modes of physical fields, and why we would like to generalize sampling theory to curved space-time. Then I'm going to give an introduction to sampling theory. I'm going to, in particular, discuss a class of functions called band-limited functions, which we will later generalize to curved manifolds. And finally, I'll get to the meat of my talk, in which I'll talk about generalizing the idea of band-limited functions to curved space-time, generalizing sampling theory to curved space-time, and doing this by implementing a type of covariant, generally covariant ultraviolet cutoff. And in particular, I'll talk about the consequences for flat space-time and some preliminary results we have for sitter space-time. All right, so first of all, there's several quantum gravity arguments have led us to expect that there should be an ultraviolet cutoff on the modes of physical fields in nature. Indeed, the many ultraviolet divergencies that occur in quantum field theory suggest that quantum field theory, that occur when there's no ultraviolet cutoff present in quantum field theory, really suggests that quantum field theory is ill-defined on a continuous curved space-time. And quantum field theory, of course, does become well defined if space-time is actually just a discrete lattice of points. On the other hand, general relativity is formulated on a smooth differential manifold. And it would seem that discreteness of space-time would violate symmetries of the manifold, like Lorentz invariants in flat space-time. So the question is, how can we come up with a description of space-time that will satisfy both quantum field theory and general relativity? Okay, so this is the idea that Dr. Kim and I have been pursuing, and that's that it could be that space-time is fundamentally a smooth differential manifold, and yet it could be at the same time that the physical fields that live on the manifold possess merely a finite spatial density of degrees of freedom. Namely, it could be that the values any physical field takes on any spatial lattice of sufficient density determine it uniquely so that it can be reconstructed everywhere from the values it takes on such a spatial lattice of sufficient density. This is an attractive possibility because if this could be done, then any physical theory that we have could be formulated on the differential smooth manifold or equivalently on any one of these lattices of sufficient spatial density. So in other words, just to provide a framework in which both general relativity and quantum field theory can work together. And since there should be no preference among all the lattices of sufficient density, space symmetries of the space-time, like Lorentz invariants and flat space-time, would be preserved. So the question is there a mathematical theory that describes classes or spaces, classes of fields or spaces of functions with these special properties, namely with the special properties that they are spaces of continuous functions, yet they have merely a finite density of degrees of freedom? And the answer is yes, it's called sampling theory. So before I get into discussing more about sampling theory on the next slide, I just wanted to mention that a similar problem to the one we face here was faced by Shannon in the 40s when he was he developed his discrete theory of information, and then he wanted to extend it and generalize it to a theory which described the information content of continuous signals, like music signals. And sampling theory is the tool he used to do that.
So in an expanding universe, what does sufficiently dense mean? If the scale factor changed by a huge factor?
Right, so
you find sufficiently dense initially or finally, or you should abandon?
Well, sufficiently dense will probably be something to do with, sufficiently dense will be in terms of proper volume.
You can see at the end, I mean, that's the target. From that stuff.
Okay, so so what is sampling theory? As I've already mentioned or alluded to, sampling theory is, roughly speaking, the study of certain classes of functions which have the property that they are perfectly reconstructible from the values they take on certain discrete sets of points. An important classical example, which we will be talking about a lot before, about a lot more in the next few slides, is the Hilbert space of band-limited functions, with band-limit omega. So omega is some finite positive number. And this Hilbert space is a Hilbert space of square integrable functions whose Fourier transforms have support only in the compact interval minus omega to omega. Okay, and this is actually a thriving area of research today. This whole conference is devoted just to sampling theory, and there's a lot of literature both in the mathematics and the engineering communities, so we have a lot of resources to draw from in generalizing sampling theory to curved space time. Okay, so here I'm going to talk a little bit more about band-limited functions, as I've already mentioned. So I'm going to let B omega stand for the Hilbert space of band-limited functions with band-limited omega. As I've already mentioned, these functions are such that the square integrable functions whose Fourier transforms have support only in the interval minus omega to omega. And I wanted to give you, for those of you who aren't very familiar with sampling theory, I wanted to give a concrete example of a formula which reconstructs any band-limited function from its values on a certain discrete set of points. Okay. In this Hilbert space of square integral functions of the interval minus omega to omega, this is a resolution of the identity. So this brackets here, this is supposed to denote the ultimate inner product. And these vectors b sub xn, these are just plane waves of frequency xn truncated to the interval minus omega to omega, where xn is n times pi over omega, where n is an integer. And we know from Fourier theory that this is indeed a resolution of the identity for this Hilbert space here. So given any band-limited function little f and its Fourier transform, capital F, we know that its Fourier transform can be written like this using the resolution of the identity. And we observe that the inner product of the Fourier transform with the truncated plane wave b sub xn, if we actually write out what that is, we observe that this really is just the value of the band-limited function at the point xn up to a factor here. And so if we take the inverse Fourier transform of this formula here, then we get this. And if we write out what the inverse Fourier transform of this truncated plane wave is, we get this, which is the same function, which looks something like that. Putting it all together, we get this formula. And we see indeed that any band-limited function truly can be reconstructed perfectly if we just know its values on this discrete set of points.
And what's the theorem that there is such an f of x and it interpolates between the points xn?
No, the theorem is that f of x, f itself is an arbitrary element of this Hilbert space here. And we see that any arbitrary element of this Hilbert space here, if you know that arbitrary element, if you know its values on this discrete set of points, you know it everywhere for all x. Because this series, this converges strongly to that element.
No, but I'm asking, if you know f of x of n at the point xn,
yes,
and you make this construction, yes, you give it a big omega, and then you use this f of x to make an approximation of the value of f between the points xn.
This is not an approximation, this is exact. This is exact. This,
yeah, but you don't know it for that. So you only know it
for that. No, but that's the point. If you know that the frequency spectrum is bounded, your interpolation is exact.
Yes, there's no error in this interpolation.
I know it's amazing, but it's true. And this equation is one of the most used in the world, because every CD player is, you know.
Yeah, this is the classical Shannon sampling problem.
No, I mean, there must be some. Look. if I know x becomes 17 points, if I know f of x n becomes 17 points, and I make this construction on 17
the regular
f of x, and I ask for the value of f of x in 100,000 points.
No. On the regularly spaced points.
X, n are not particular.
They're discrete, they're not finite.
It's an infinite set of points. You have to know that.
It's
infinite set of points.
X and n
is any integer.
Actually, I have a question related to that. Does it have to be this particular infinite set of points?
No, and actually, that will be my next slide.
Okay.
In fact, we will see on the next slide that it just has to be a set of points that is sufficiently dense in real life.
I said that's of course the crucial question, because if it had to be this one, you would break all the symmetries just as if you were
right.
But it doesn't have to be.
But does it have to be a set that's equally spaced?
Not
equally
spaced.
Okay, good.
Okay, for the moment, just break it. But we don't have every function
is. Well, any function in this particular Hilbert space, not any square interval function, but any square interval function whose Fourier transform has support only in that interval. Okay, so yes, that's the point of this slide. And the point of this slide is there's nothing special about that set of points xn that we saw on the previous slide. The point of this slide is that any set of points that is sufficiently dense on the real line will have the property that if you know any bounded function, if you know the values of any bounded function on that set of points, you know it everywhere. You can reconstruct it everywhere. So here's just a definition. Sampling lattice, which I will sometimes call a set of sampling, is a set of real points with a smallest, there's a smallest distance, this is just a technical thing, I assume there's a smallest distance between any two members of the set. And we call it a set of sampling if the linear map, which maps the space of bounded functions onto the space of square summable sequences, defined by what it does is it takes the bounded function and it maps it onto its values on the points of lambda. If this linear map is bounded above a globe, or in other words, if it's in vertical, then we call this set of points a set of sampling. And I think it's clear why we call it a set of sampling, because if this map is in vertical, that means we can reconstruct, just by knowing these values here, we can use the inverse of R to get the whole bounded function back. Right, and so we can define a notion of density of this set. I'll be more precise what I mean by density of this set of real points. If we let n minus of r to be the minimum number of the set of points in any interval of length r, then we define what's called the lower Brillouin density of the set of points lambda by the limit of this quantity over r as r goes to infinity. And so then we have this theorem that really says any lattice of sufficient density will do. And it says that, first of all, if it is a set of sampling, then its lower Brillouin density is greater or equal to the bandwidth omega over pi. And it will be a set of sampling, provided the lower Brillouin density is strictly greater than the bandwidth over pi.
So you can think of it as the average space.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But you can do as bad as you want over as big a region as you want, and still recover it as long as asymptotically you're okay.
That's right. Yeah. It's just that the reconstruction might be more and more sensitive than to small errors that you might have made in your measurement, if you do it for music, for example.
Yeah, but you have to keep more and more members. Like, for example, if you saw the sum on the previous slide, you'd have to keep more and more terms to get as good an approximation.
Mm-hmm.
To converge slower to the actual function.
There's tons of literature on that.
So I just wanted to mention more general frequency-limited functions, because this will actually arise at some point later in the talk. So here I'm considering S here, which is an arbitrary compact set in n-dimensional Euclidean space. And we will say, call V of S the Hilbert space of functions frequency-limited by S. That will be the Hilbert space of all square interval functions whose Fourier transforms have support only in the compact set X. So, for example, S could be a single real integral, and then we would have that kind of function, like the previous slide. For this Hilbert space of functions, we have the following theorem about the sets of sampling, or the sampling lattices. And that's, this theorem says that if the set, discrete set of points lambda is a set of sampling for this Hilbert space, then its Orr-Perlin density is greater or equal to, so this is the Lebesgue measure work. This just means the volume of the set S over 2 pi to the n. So the moral I want you to take away from the slide is that if you have a space of functions whose Fourier transforms have support only in a compact set, then the minimum possible density of a set of sampling for that space of functions is proportional to the volume of that compact set S in which their Fourier transforms have support. So, and we will call that volume of n.
Volume and frequency space.
Yeah, the volume and frequency space outside of which the Fourier transforms of the function go. So are there any more questions about sampling theory? Because I'm now going to go on and talk about sampling theory on curved space time. So, do you have any questions? That would be a good time. Or if there's any confusion. Okay, so how can we generalize the concept of abandonment and the idea of abandoned function to curved manifolds? And I think you'll see that it's actually pretty straightforward to do if we first make the following observation, and that is that abandonment, as we've described so far, is really just a cutoff on the spectrum of the Laplacian of the real line. So the Laplacian of the real line is just the second derivative operator. And indeed, we see that the space abandonment functions, abandonment omega, is just the subspace of square integrable functions on the real line, spanned by those eigenfunctions to the Laplacian of the real line, whose eigenvalues are less than or equal to the abandonment squared magnitude. So indeed, we see that any abandonment function can be written as an uncountable linear combination of such eigenvalues. So now what we do to define now what we're going to do is we will define the space, the Hilbert space of covariantly bandwidth functions of an arbitrary manifold M with bandwidth omega to be that subspace of square integrable functions on a manifold spanned by the eigenfunctions to the Laplacian or the Downward-Berichon of the manifold, whose eigenvalues are less than or equal to the bandwidth squared magnitude. And indeed, this is a fully covariant definition, since the spectrum of the Laplacian or the Downward-Berichon is covariant.
Mm-hmm. Is the sufficiency criterion that your last slide said was not known in general, is that known for, let's say, a compact space, like on a sphere, using this definition of band-limited functions?
For certain special cases, I'm sure, like for the sphere, maybe. I don't know about in general, like for any compact space. I don't know.
Sorry.
So he was talking about, like, we made this general definition of band-limited functions of a given manifold. And he was wondering if, you know how Landau's theorem only knows the necessity conditions for set of sampling, not the sufficiency. He was wondering if sufficiency conditions were known if the manifold is always compact.
Or specifically, say, a sphere. Using the Laplacian eigenfunctions as your basis.
No, I don't know. I mean, the conjectures, you could easily write down conjectures and everybody would believe in, but I don't know what's the improvement.
And in fact, actually, the sufficiency conditions, which I mentioned, haven't actually even been generalized to Riemannian manifolds yet. It's pretty new. Sampling theory on Riemannian manifolds, I think, has really, there's just been a few landmark papers in the past in 2 years or 4 years.
You see, the engineers are not so much into curved space.
That's it.
And as far as we know, nobody actually has applied sampling theory to pseudo Riemannian manifolds at all.
Oh, yeah.
So, okay. So the idea we're really pursuing is that we want to. The idea we'd like to pursue is that the set of all physical fields on a given spacetime could actually be a subspace of covariantly bandlimited functions of that spacetime with some given bandwidth. And so this would mean that, for example, in the path integral formalism, this means that we are really restricting our set of fields or paths that our path integral runs over. And we want to investigate if, as in the simple case where the manifold is the real line, do these subspaces of covariantly bandwidth fields have perhaps a countable or even perhaps a finite number of spatial degrees of freedom? If that were the case, that would be a huge simplification in the path into a formalism. Would reduce the uncountable number of spatial integrations to merely a countable or even a finite number.
This smells very much like effect field theory with a cut off omega. How is it different?
Well, basically, we're doing that, but we're looking at it. We're asking if we put the simplest possible linear cut off that corresponds to Vandrin, what does it mean in terms of sampling theory?
You're investigating what effect theory means in terms of sampling.
Quantum field theory with the simple simple but generally covariant algebraic.
Can I ask a question?
I didn't get to it.
Okay.
UV cut off, but what, how did I understand it? Because it's from the eigenvalue of the Darmstadt, so you need to cut off the frequency, not the momentum. It's just omega square.
With all the problems that come with that.
So, in which respect it is a UV cutoff? What chance it is a UV cutoff if you bound off-shellness momentum?
Yeah, exactly. Basically, you're not allowing virtual particles.
Well, that's what I understood.
Yeah, you're not allowing virtual particles to have arbitrarily high.
So, why should it act as a cutoff? Ever?
Well, for example, if you check and you find that you get a sampling theorem and you are effectively discretizing one or several dimensions.
This is identical to effect. I mean, effective field theory, you do. You cut off all the eigenvalues in the last level. Just arbitrary stick.
Cool. Do you want to say that maybe more for the end?
Because you could say much more about it.
I see countable or even finite. This would apply to Lorentzian.
You see, there's something of finer comes out.
It's countably finite.
Or even actually finite.
It's countably finite as well. It's compact. Oh, it's finite.
No, not even compact.
Okay, so I wanted to go through some detail just in the simplest case of pseudo-Riemannian manifold. Let's consider this black space time. What happens if we consider, well, what properties does the space covariant and abandonment functions have in this flat space time? So here we have the down version. It's just minus the I squared by the T squared plus the spatial Laplacian. Eigenfunctions are the plane waves. P naught is the temporal frequency. The bold P is the spatial frequency vector. We put a cutoff on the spectrum of this down version, so we impose this inequality here. We see that actually the temporal frequencies and the spatial frequencies can still be arbitrarily large in magnitude and still satisfy this inequality because of the minus sign. But if we fix a temporal frequency, so we fix P naught T equal to omega times B, then we see that for that fixed temporal mode, the spatial frequencies are confined to a compact set, which is described by this inequality here. So that means that for any fixed temporal mode, any fixed temporal mode is actually spatially abandonment. If you take the spatial Fourier transform of any fixed temporal mode, it has support only in a compact set. So that means any fixed temporal mode will obey a spatial sampling theorem, like I showed earlier. And in particular, or conversely, we could have instead have chosen to fix a spatial mode, and then we would see that every fixed spatial mode obeys a sampling theorem in time. So suppose we fix a temporal mode, and so that the spatial frequencies for that fixed temporal mode are confined in a set. Set described by this inequality here. The volume of that set is given in this chart here, and it depends on the number of spatial dimensions. Now I want you to notice that, so here, B here is just proportional to the fixed temporal frequency, remember. So this volume is just the difference between this and this in 1 plus 1 dimensions. It's the difference between two disks, one of this radius and one of this radius, in 1 plus 2 dimensions. And between two spheres in 1 plus 2 dimensions. But I want you to notice that in the limit as the fixed temporal frequency, or as in the limit as b goes to infinity, this volume, this bandwidth volume, actually goes to 0 in 1 plus 1 dimensions. It stays constant in 1 plus 2 dimensions, and it actually diverges in 1 plus 3 dimensions. Now, this is important. Remember we saw earlier that the minimum possible density the minimum possible sample density for a space of functions whose Fourier transforms have support only in a compact set is proportional to the volume of the compact set on which the Fourier transforms of those functions have support. So the fact that there's this big difference in the behavior of this bandwidth volume in different numbers of spatial dimensions will have consequences for sampling theorem in this flat space. Let me know if I go too quickly in this part, because I know this part can get a little...
Well, maybe...
Is there something I can do to make things?
Well, I mean, I think you mentioned that two space dimensions is really critical here.
Well, yeah.
Are you getting to that?
That comes in later slides. I'm going to spend a few slides talking about this. I'm going to try to make this as clear as I can. Okay, so I've already mentioned this. Right, and so let's work through the example, specific example of 1+1 dimensional flat space. So let's assume that we have a covariantly bandwidthed field in this flat space time, phi. Let capital phi be its temporal Fourier transform. Let's fix a temporal mode, p not equal to omega times b. And then as on the previous slides, I'm really just reiterating here what was on the previous slide. This fixed temporal mode, p not is fixed, is such that if you take its Fourier transform only has support in this compact set S of B. And the main thing to observe is that the volume of this, or the length of this compact set S of B, of this interval S of B, never exceeds a finite value, which is 2 root 2 omega. So there's a maximum bandwidth volume for any fixed temporal mode. And so the fact that there's an upper bound of the bandwidth volume for any fixed temporal mode means that it is consistent with Landau's theorem that there could be a set of real spatial points which are dense enough to be a set of sampling for every fixed temporal mode. Is that clear? And so that means that, yeah, so there could be a set of points, spatial points, which is a set of sampling for every fixed temporal mode. That means that there could be a set of spatial points such that if you know any fixed temporal mode, the values of any fixed temporal mode on that set of points, you can reconstruct it for all space. Okay, and indeed, such sets do exist. Here's an example. It's not important what this example is, it's just important that such an example does exist. And so that means if we do have given such a set of points, which is a set of sampling for every fixed temporal mode, that means that I've already said it's a few times, but that means that every fixed temporal mode, so if your p-naught is fixed, can be reconstructed perfectly everywhere for all space from this information here, namely its values on this discrete set of points. Which in turn means that every covariantly bandwidthed function on this manifold can be reconstructed everywhere for all perfectly from this information here. Namely, if you know the covariantly bandwidthed function on this discrete set of points and you know its time evolution on that discrete set of points, you can reconstruct it for all space and time. Now, remember, we went through this whole argument fixing a temporal mode, but we didn't have to do that. We could have fixed a spatial mode instead. And then we could go through the same argument and we would arrive at a similar conclusion, namely that any covariantly bandwidthed function in space can be reconstructed perfectly from its values on a certain discrete set of spatial hypersurfaces. What about in higher dimensions, spatial dimensions? Well, in 1+2 dimensions, we have a similar situation to that on the previous slide, because we saw in 1+2 dimensions there was again a maximum bandwidth volume for any fixed temporal mode. But if you remember, in 1+3 dimensions, there is no upper bound of the bandwidth volume for any fixed temporal mode, which means that there cannot, by Landau's theorem, that density theorem, there can be no set of spatial points, which is a set of sampling for every fixed temporal mode in 1+3 dimensions. We can show that there are discrete sets of points, say like in 1+2 dimensions, there are discrete sets of points such that the information, this information here, so the values of a covariantly bandwidthed field on that discrete set of points and its time evolution on them, is sufficient to reconstruct it everywhere. And in 1+3 dimensions, one can show that there are discrete sets of lines in the given spatial coordinate, such that if one knows vertically bound in the field on those lines and time evolution on them, you can also reconstruct it there. But really, we see here that 2D spatial surfaces are special, because on a 2D spatial surface, we see that any covertly abandoned field on the manifold has a finite density of degrees of freedom on a 2D spatial surface. So we can readily define the information content of a covertly abandoned field on any 2D surface. And this is probably very relevant for holography.
I'm sorry, I didn't get the part about the one-coordinate line. Does that mean you effectively cannot discretize that coordinate?
No, well, you can't, yeah, so, yeah, you can't,
You have to know it on, well, on a line.
Yeah.
So it's effectively not quite.
That's right. If you do full 1+3 dimensions, yeah. And so we expect, like, so this was the cyclic space, flat space time, but we expect that, you know, a similar situation will probably occur in more general space times. Namely that, you know, for example, it may be possible to reconstruct any covertly abandoned field in a 1+1+2 dimensional space time. From its values taking on certain discrete sets of time curves. Okay, so that's all I want to say about flat space time. So now I just wanted to mention some stuff we've been doing more recently. We've been working on FRW space times, in particular, the sitter space time. So here I've just written out the line elements. I'm going to assume 1+1 dimensions to make things simpler for now. And in this 1+1 dimensions, so here it is in formal time. The Galois-Berchian takes a particularly simple form. Right, and so in particular, we've been working most recently on De Sitter space-time with a finite NV time. So we just artificially chop off a manifold in time at some finite time, which I've chosen here to be zero. Okay. And so then in this space-time, the Galois-Berchian looks like this, and it acts on this Hilbert space here. Okay, so if we now, if we put a cutoff on the spectrum of this Galois-Berchian in the space-time, that means that for each fixed spatial mode k, we put a cutoff on the spectrum of this operator delta k, which is just the Galois-Berchian for fixed k, which acts on this Hilbert space here. And some of the preliminary results we found is that if we do this, we find that the subspace of the Hilbert space spanned by eigenfunctions to this delta k operator obeying the band limit is actually finite dimensional for each fixed k. And that's pretty dramatic, because that means that any finite, and we call this finite dimension n sub k, that means any set of finite set of n sub k points in time, if they have the property that this matrix here, which is given by whose entries are just the values of the eigenfunctions of the operator delta k obeying the band limit or the cutoff, the spectral cutoff at the points eta sub n. So if this matrix is invertible for this given set of n sub k points, then we see that this finite set of points is actually a set of sampling in time for this fixed spatial mode k. Because if the spatial mode obeys the spectral cutoff that we impose, then it can be written as a finite linear combination of all the eigenfunctions of the operator delta k obeying the cutoff, and there's only a finite number of them, so we get a finite linear combination. And provided that the finite set of points has this property that this matrix is invertible, these coefficients can be computed from the values of the fixed spatial mode on the finite set of points theta j. So, in summary, if you know this fixed spatial mode obeying this cutoff on a finite set of points, you can reconstruct it everywhere for all time, which is pretty dramatic.
But up to the end time?
Up to the end time. Right, so the end time, zero.
So just to understand, if you consider constant, then you have k squared eta squared. So the constant is excluded because it will If you put dB type of 0, then you have k squared k squared. Do you impose that the
Laplace
be bounded? So the constant is excluded?
Well, the constant is not square integrable on this. It's a Hilbert, it would not be normalizable. So it wouldn't actually be a function in the Hilbert space.
So maybe it phrased differently. What bothers me is that even if the derivative term behaves properly, there is a systematic divergence from the k squared eta squared dependence. So.
Oh, right, but.
And this will cross. So what does that mean? That you will go above your domain?
We don't. Because eta is confined to the interval 1 to infinity, we don't actually have a problem with the eta to the minus 2 blowing up like that.
No, eta goes to infinity. So. Whatever is the value, the behavior of the derivative term, there is a k squared eta squared that will.
Which just means that the functions are suppressed. Yeah. It just means that when you impose the cover, that the functions that you are left with
have to decay very rapidly.
Through their derivative term.
Well, and because there's an integer squared.
So you exclude classes of function.
That's the point of putting it around. Yeah. That you start out with all square integrable functions, and then you consider a subspace of functions. It's just like taking all square integrable functions and then considering only the functions up to a certain frequency interval. It's not exactly frequency interval,
this is a convergence.
Okay.
A plane wave acceptable?
If you define plane wave as eigenvectors with their inversion with an eigenvalue smaller than the cover here. But that may not be a plane wave in the form of E to the
I. E to the I omega eta is also excluded.
Yeah.
So all plane waves are excluded.
Except if you define a plane wave eigenvectors with their inversion.
All right, so we have a lot of questions. We're in the middle of this. We still have a lot of questions to ask and to answer. We want to know how this finite dimension NCK behaves as a function of K. Does it have an upper bound as K goes to infinity? And how does it behave as an end time of the manifold? Remember, we've tried to cut the manifold off in time artificially. And we expect that we will find an overall temporal sampling formula for these quadratically bounded functions. And of course, we're interested in the whole six space time. So there's some of the techniques we use so far, some basic complex analysis, some operator theory, specifically self-done extensions of symmetric operators, and spectral theory. And that's really it for my talk. As far as we know, we're really the first to apply sampling theory to two pseudo-Riemannian manifolds. So we would just like to develop a full understanding of the reconstruction properties of these spaces of covariantly bounded functions of the manifolds, especially for physically relevant space-time. And it would be nice if we could get some sort of general results as well. So that's really it for my talk. So thanks for listening.
It's a question. Suppose let's restrict to the one-dimensional case first.
Sure.
And take, but instead of an infinite line, a circle. So then, I could expand any function on the circle in Fourier modes, and that's a discrete set, and it's pretty clear that any infinite number of set of points that I evaluate the function on the circle will be enough to reconstruct every function on the circle. So the question, is that true, first of all?
If you put a cutoff on the frequency spectrum again, you're left with a finite dimensional functions. Because you're now looking only at the Fourier sine functions up to a certain
I think I didn't say what I meant. I take an infinite set of points on a circle.
No. Because if you just look at L2 without cutoff, or L2.
Because when you consider those functions on the circle, you can really just consider that as L2 of an interval, right? Where you identify the two endpoints.
Yeah.
And the thing is, you can know an L2 function on an interval at an infinite number of points in that interval, and you still don't know it anywhere, everywhere.
What?
Because any infinite number of points is a set of measures zero.
Okay.
Right.
and the rest of my question is irrelevant.
And compulsive.
Yes. Are you planning to do quantum field theory on this?
Monday? Well, I don't know what we need personally. maybe. I think I've got my hands full with enough interesting questions as it is for me, so.
But I could take the monthly fix then.
So it will be done?
Ooh. Well, my question is, aren't you concerned about cutting off in moving moment in K instead of cutting off in physical momentum, in physical momentum?
One choice is made here. Because we're cutting off the spectrum of the Lambertian, which is a totally covariant thing to do. You're not,
but the example you gave is cut off in K.
No. You cut off the spectrum of the Lambertian, and that takes a particular shape in particular coordinates. But it's overall a covariant thing to do.
So you can take into account the increasing number of moves.
This is all very similar to effective field theory, except of course effective field theory is really only well defined in the Euclidean space, and you have to analytically continue to get real physical answers to momentum space by the famous finite number weak rotation. What is in some sense new here is to try to do it directly in Lorentzian space times. But at least in effect field theory, you know, the common notion is that indeed all these, if you integrate out the high energy modes or basically, whatever you cut off, then in the Euclidean continuation and the Euclidean field theory, you definitely have the fact that you simply need, sufficiently dense, you basically get the information over field content on the size your cutoff at any one point. So if you know the value of the field at any one of these patches, the size of your cutoff, then you can basically reconstruct all the physical information that's necessary. So a lot of this is the Euclidean version of this is basically contained in effective field.
Where it is just the application of Fanon theory for time.
Effective field theory is a lot more.
But that aspect.
Okay, so maybe we move to the next talk and thank Rob again. Next speaker instead. Source was back in growth.